Thanks to everybody for coming at 8:30 in the morning on a Monday morning. Obviously, you're very dedicated to the idea of community programming. And so I want to just start out. We're going to start, as Karen said, with some evidence that we've been working on over the last couple of years on trying to estimate the impact of the community programming, specifically through the Child Survival and Health Grants Program. I just wanted to start out by thanking somebody who's here. First of all, Karen Fogg, who's crunched a lot of the numbers that you'll see in the slides here, and also Naza Qureshi, who's kind of given a lot of guidance and advice about how to present the data and that sort of thing, although a lot of other people have helped out on this work as well, some of whom are right here at the podium. And I wanted to also just start out by saying what kind of slightly modified learning objectives are from those that were in the abstract. We estimated the mortality impact of 32 recent USAID-supported child survival and health grants programs. That's CSHGP. And we are going to also try to look a little bit at what the relative mortality impact of community-based versus facility-based programming is. And then just a slide or so on what I think the implications are for policy and funding priorities, which I think other of the presentations we'll get into in more depth. Okay. There we go. So real quickly, I think most of the people here already know some of this background. About first, I'll go over what the CSHGP is. It's centrally funded USAID programming for child survival, and now has gotten into other health issues as well, but mostly child survival. It has supported many different NGOs, over 40 over the years. It's been around for 22 years. I think Henry will talk a little more in depth about some of the experience. And the projects are quite standardized, so we are trying to do some kind of standardized analysis here that I'll present. And this is really amenable to that sort of thing because all the projects are relatively similar. They're all community-centered maternal and child health projects. They're all about the same size, between 10,000 and 100,000 under five beneficiaries. They cover typically about one district, sometimes several, and they all get about the same amount of money over a 3 to 5 year period. All use the same sort of planning matrix and methodology called a detailed implementation plan. Similar evidence-based interventions that are outlined in the technical reference materials, which are on the web at the Child Survival Technical Support website, all use the same sort of M&E systems and have an online reporting system. So we kind of try to use that to advantage to do a standardized analysis. Now, if we can actually get the next slide to work. And then on the other side, what was the standardized analysis? Well, we at CSTS were quite excited when the 2003 Lancet articles came out on child survival, thinking this was kind of finally maybe a way for more comprehensive programming to be able to estimate what the impact was from their coverage changes, because that's exactly what the Child Health Epidemiology Reference Group was trying to do for those articles. Let me see if we can... It's a little sticky here to actually get this to work. There we go. Okay, I guess that was a little quick. Hey, can we? Okay. So what did the Child Health Epidemiology Reference Group do for those articles? First, they estimated the percentage of deaths attributable to the six most common causes of death worldwide. And they reviewed the literature to try to find the effect sizes of the most evidence-based interventions against those, and then developed a model for estimating the cumulative impact of scaling up all those interventions. So we figured that was very similar to what we might want to do with actual project data as opposed to their theoretical model for what it would mean to scale up these interventions theoretically. I don't know if anyone wants to use this instead. Okay, that's better. Thanks. If you could do that for me, because this mouse is not working very well. So Then, using that philosophy, what they did was they took the number of deaths attributable to 6 million causes of death, which you can see here, diarrhea, pneumonia, measles, malaria, HIV, and neonatal causes. They accounted for the effects of malnutrition as well on mortality. And they also, in their model, came up with a way to try to take into account any one intervention's effect on multiple different diseases. And keep just maybe one more click. So, for instance, vitamin A reduces measles, diarrhea, and malaria deaths, and they take into account each of those effects separately. They also, we won't get into the methodology here, have described it elsewhere, and they describe it also in the 2003 and 2005 Lancet articles. Came out with a way to try to avoid double counts, so no one child can be saved twice. And then the final kind of way that things are toted up is to say that the number of lives saved is the baseline number of deaths times the intervention effectiveness times the coverage change. And we have all those pieces of data for CSHGP projects. So these are, there are about 30 plus interventions that they go over. About half of those are used in CSHGP projects. Any one project wouldn't have used all 18 of these, but between a quarter and a half of these interventions are, but in any one typical project, will use these things. You can see there are things from antenatal care to different diarrhea prevention and treatment modalities, insecticide-treated bed nets, etc. So running through quickly, I hope, how this works. In order to kind of calculate the baseline number of deaths, you'll need a couple pieces of data: the under 5 mortality rate, the number of births in the area, which we can get from national data sets, and then within the model, the percentage of deaths attributable to malaria. It's actually modeled. It's not from Ministry of Health data, which tends to be underreported. So we can kind of figure out that term of the equation. We know the ITN effectiveness rate from the literature, which they've gotten. Say they use 75% as their efficacy rate, or should say effectiveness rate in actual field trials. And then finally, need the coverage change. And putting those all together, one more click there, you can see, very nice. If we would do that, we would save 89 lives in 1 year. So that's next slide. What we would have for the actual number of lives saved. So this will be exciting to be using it. So then what we also say is if we start out with a coverage of 0.4% and go to 33.6%, how would we expect it to rise over time to be able to say what the lives saved in every year of the project was? And we use the simplest assumption, which is that there was a smooth rise, and we actually have some data that shows that was a fairly good assumption. So in the present study, we presented something last year from CSTS about this, about comparing different approaches from 13 CSHGP projects. Now we've kind of increased the data set, and we're going to show some data here from 32 projects. So hopefully this computer will work a little better for the next presenters. So here again are there are 32 projects in this set of projects in 20 different countries implemented by 18 different NGOs. So this is not any one NGO's work, but hopefully a fairly click through a few here. You can see just a few pieces of data here about each of the projects that just stop right there. That are the number of beneficiaries, and this is both women of reproductive age and under 5, and the cost per beneficiary, which typically runs $5 or more dollars per beneficiary per year, but there is a range, and you can see underlined in red here, I've got a project in Nicaragua, which was the smallest, 13,000 beneficiaries, and right next door in Guatemala, one which was the largest, 334,000 beneficiaries. And you can see there in this data set, there are some that are in the same country here, Cambodia 1, 2, 3, and there's even a fourth. Like I say, there are some repeats. That's why there's 20 countries in the data set. So a summary of the projects here for 32 projects. The typical duration is 3 to 5 years. The median was 4 years. Number of beneficiaries, the median is about 72,000. And the cost per beneficiary, although there were a few outliers that were as many, it costs as much as $20 or $25 per beneficiary per year. Almost all the projects cost around $5 to $10, so $5.55 was the average amount. And so here are the results when we run the Child Health Epidemiology Reference Group model on these projects with the coverage changes. We can see that the estimated mortality reduction for under fives, quite a range there, 2 to 51%, although 80% of the projects ran in the about 15 to 30% range. So the weighted average, weighting by the size of the project, was 25% mortality reduction, which is, I think, quite impressive. How many lives does that actually translate to? Just under 1,000 is the median, or actually the weighted average in this case, number of lives saved per project. Again, I think a pretty impressive number for projects of this size. The cost for USAID is just over, somewhere between $1,200 and $1,300 per life saved. And if we use this methodology known as DALYS, Disability Adjusted Life Years, only just taking that mortality reduction, we just have to divide by 30 to find out how many dollars per DALY saved, and it comes out to about $43 per DALY saved, which World Health Organization and World Bank say anything under $100 is a very highly effective project. And so the average is well under that. So how does that compare? Well, if we would take a vertical program, like say if I just take that Child Health Epidemiology Reference Group model and take Kenya, for instance, and we would try to increase net rates nationwide by 20% in the entire country of Kenya over for a five-year project, the cumulative number of lives saved would be 3,800. There were two projects in the database that saved more than that, or projects that were much smaller than covering all of Kenya, but it just happens that they, by having 5 or 10 different interventions that were very highly effective in a very needy population, that they were able to have an equivalent impact or estimated impact. So how is it that they're saving lives? Well, the three most effective interventions are ORT use, breastfeeding, and antibiotics for pneumonia, and much of those antibiotics for pneumonia were delivered in community settings rather than facilities. So the top three there you can see in this bar graph, that first bar graph at the bottom left-hand corner, are all mostly all community settings. And if we look at all the different interventions, about two-thirds of the estimated impact is through community-level interventions. Next, if we can get the next slide. So also, just a little bit of a comparative analysis here as well. If we look at rural versus urban settings, and about 75% were in rural settings, moderate versus small scale, or high versus moderate baseline mortality. Most of the high mortality countries were in sub-Saharan Africa. We can see that relatively the cost per DALY saved is about 2 to 3 times better in each of those capitalized settings there. But that in all cases, go to the next slide, we're under 100, that kind of magic number of $100 per DALY saved. So in pretty much every setting we examined, they were highly effective according to the model that WHO and World Bank use. So just in conclusion here, at spending $5 to $6 per beneficiary per year, these child health NGO-driven projects are highly effective. Half the projects were estimated to reduce under five mortality between 1/4 and 1/2. Highly cost-effective, well under that $100, like I said, per DALY saved. The majority of the impact comes from community-based settings, about 60 to 70%. And that agrees with the analysis that both UNICEF and the Lancet people did, showing that in general community-based settings are the most highly effective places. So we can go to the next slide. And so some possible policy implications of this, which is, first, more priority needs to be given to community-level interventions for child survival, which are highly effective and cost-effective. and that finally NGOs probably should be playing a much stronger role in achieving this than in the scale-up of community-level interventions, as they have a comparative advantage at community-level interventions. And as Global Fund work has shown, I've been working on a Global Fund evaluation, and I think it's very clear from what's been going on with MDG6 for infectious diseases that across the world, in the 134 Global Fund countries, more than half the money is going to NGOs, and they've had a very easy time absorbing that money and converting it into highly effective programming. I think the same thing could be done with MDG4 for child survival.